Golf Smarter number 627. No more excuses for too expensive or too long. Introducing Quick Golf. Only pay for the holes you play.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Harvey.
Fred, hello.
How are you?
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I am really, you and I have been communicating for months now because I am absolutely fascinated with Quick Golf, or do we call it Quick.Golf?
Well, formerly it's Quick.Golf, but just for sake of industry and talking around, we just call it Quick Golf. That's fine.
Yeah. So yeah. Give me a real brief description of what Quick Golf is.
Quick Golf is a web app that enables golf courses to easily offer a pay-by-hole alternative to golfers who don't have the time or maybe the inclination to play a full 18-hole round of golf or even 9 holes of golf.
Congratulations. I think it makes total sense. I'm very excited about it. And I hope that it shows up in a neighborhood near me and near every golfer that we know. And that's why, you know, it's one thing for the golfer, which it just makes total sense. But for you, the sell to a golf course may not be that simple.
Well, selling to any technology to a golf course is not that simple. I've been selling various technologies for 20 years, golf POS and T-sheet systems, GPS systems on golf carts, and a couple of other things. And just generally, the golf industry has been slow to adapt to the various technologies that are being thrown at them on a daily basis. On the maintenance side, sure, a lot of them have put in irrigation systems that have some really cool technologies with sensors and timers and so on that are terrific. But on the customer service side and what might attract more golfers to a golf course, first of all, a lot of them are expensive. You know, if you want to install a couple of simulators in your clubhouse, it's going to cost you, you know, $40,000 to $60,000 each. It's tough for a golf course owner to pencil out the ROI on that.
Sure.
What we've done with Quick Golf is just say, you know, look, we're a commission system. We don't get paid unless people are coming out to play Quick Golf and using the app and paying on a per hole basis. Hmm. So we've made it as simple as we possibly can, but it's still a situation for golf courses scratching their heads going, are there really people out there that just want to play 6 holes of golf?
Oh, you're and kidding.
Right now we're proving that there is.
I would think so, yeah. It's so interesting you say that golf is slow to adopt and adapt. But if 5 guys win with a long putter in one season, boom, long putters are gone.
Right.
Anyway, yeah. So we're gonna come back to you and talk more in detail about that and how people can get involved and convince their courses to do it. But I wanted to give a kind of a case study before we go on with that, and that's why we like to welcome Shelley Sinatere. Shelley, hello.
Hi, Fred. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Thank you for joining us on the Golf Smarter podcast. Tell me where you're working these days.
I am the assistant golf professional at Pinewood Golf Club in Slidell, Louisiana. We're just north of New Orleans.
Okay. And how long have you been there?
I've been with them a little under 3 years now.
And looking at their website, it looks like that they've recently reopened in December of 2017. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Our golf course changed ownership on December 18th. A former member actually bought the golf course.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. He's my knight in shining armor.
Is it a private course or is it public?
It's semi-private. We were a semi-private country club that was established in 1963. And Chris, we were about to be turned into retention ponds by the city. If the city had bought the golf course, if they had bought the land. And Chris just couldn't see having that happen. He grew up there as a child. His parents were members there. And just nothing was happening as far as anybody coming along to buy the course. And he's recently retired from Shell Oil, and he just wanted to be able to spend his retirement out at the golf course and with his kids. And so he just swooped in and saved the day.
A membership isn't good enough. You have to buy the course. It's interesting because here in Northern California, in Marin County, we have a similar situation of a golf course that was owned by a family. And after 4+5 years or so, they realized that, you know, their event business was doing well, but the golf business was not sustaining itself. This golf course, as beautiful as it is, it's not the easiest course to get to in Marin County or in the Bay Area because it's in Western Marin, and they don't have a driving range. And so the business just wasn't doing well, and they've tried various things, and they finally put it up for sale. Couldn't find someone to buy it, and the county came in and purchased it. A land grant area, the group bought it and with the county. And now they've got an RFP out to get a management company to come in, and they're just trying to figure that out. So I'm somewhat familiar with what you guys went through, but you had, like you said, your knight in shining armor. Somebody, a private person, came and bought the course. What is his goal with this golf course?
Well, of course, he and his wife aren't in it. It's not a, you know, charity.
Yeah.
he's looking. The one thing I have to say about Chris, I mean, I've been in the golf business on and off for about 20 years now as an instructor, and as I've opened 2 golf courses for 2 different cities and been in the, you know, the upper echelon of private sector as well. The thing that I'm so inspired by him the most is his fresh take on things, of bringing in new ideas of how we're going to market. He gets it. Most old school golf pros still don't understand about marketing has changed. You can't run an ad in the newspaper or, you know, a radio ad or so forth and so on, that social media, the internet, and trying to come up with new and fresh ideas and cool different things to bring people more my age back to the golf course. I mean, our average age of our member is in their 70s. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I need fresh blood, you know, to influx into this golf course. And he's really brought on some great ideas, hence Quit Golf.
Oh, okay. So before we get to that part of it, what was the issue with the previous, I don't want to blame the ownership, but what was going on with the golf course that it needed to change hands?
Well, let's see. It was established in 1963. The members were stockholders, but they were a nonprofit. I'm still not quite sure how that all works accounting wise, but it was a non-for-profit golf course. The members all own stock. But when you sell the golf course, they don't get any money back. I mean, you had stock to be able to say, to have a say in what happened with the golf course. Now, they just never changed. They just kept doing business like it was in the 1970s or the 1980s or even the 90s. And they just, too many chiefs, not enough Indians, no one with fresh ideas or anybody willing to pull the trigger to try something new.
And what was happening locally with golfers? Were they just not showing up?
Well, we're an older golf course. We're set in the middle of a subdivision. So it's old school, small greens, narrow fairways, tree lined with oaks and pine trees. Not exceptionally long. I mean, I think we're total is like 6,500 yardage from the tips. But we have 3 golf courses in a very small town that are all vying for the same golf round. Even though we do get a little bit of people coming north from New Orleans, I mean, we've just, you know, just too much golf in such a small town. And so everybody's fighting for the same round.
Right, right. And how far outside of New Orleans are you?
We're outside of New Orleans proper. We're about 30 minutes.
So there's probably not just your town, but there's probably a lot of golf. I played the TPC course in New Orleans, and there's a lot of golf to choose from. And it's not necessarily 12 months a year, or do you guys play all year long?
Oh, no. I mean, we play all year long. I mean, but it's not like California or Florida or Arizona.
Yeah.
You know, it rains here a lot. It's super hot, you know, and humid. You don't know what hot is until you've come to Southern Louisiana in the middle of August and September.
Pass.
And, but no, they do play all year long, but it's just, you know, weather permitting.
Yeah.
Say.
Yeah. No, the time that I played there, even it was too cold for the alligators to come out. They were hiding on the side. They wouldn't even go in the water. It was that cold.
Exactly.
It was really kind of crazy. Anyway, so you have a lot of, you have competition. You don't have enough players for that many courses. And the business just kind of fades away. And you have a new owner that comes in who's willing to try new things and yes. get people in. And why did Quick Golf seem to appeal to Chris?
Well, we're just looking for anything and everything right now. I mean, he's willing to try just about anything. But he and I have had multiple conversations about how the golfing industry, the culture has changed. I mean, just he and I's generation, people don't want to spend their disposable income on a country club like our parents did. We've got travel baseball here. We've got travel soccer here. Parents are going to CrossFit. Things, you know, they're spending their money on taking their kids to all these tournaments, whether it be baseball or soccer, all year long. Parents are wanting to work out as quick as possible at a CrossFit box and get in and out. Nobody spends the time at a country club like I did growing up, where you woke up in the morning and your parents just dropped you off at the country club and you went swimming and you played tennis and you played golf with your friends. And it's just, there's just not enough time nowadays.
Yeah,
people's schedules are too hectic.
Yeah,
exactly. Nobody wants to spend 5 hours in a golf cart. You know, I loved it. I missed the days when there were no cell phones and you got on a golf course and nobody could get a hold of you for, you know, 4.5 hours. It was heaven. But now everybody's got their phones and everything else. So let's make the best of it.
And how does Chris, how do your team deal with people now with their cell phones and keeping busy? Are you doing more to promote allowing people to have their phones with them and make it more accessible?
Exactly. Even some of my older members are pretty tech savvy. I've actually been very, very impressed with them. But he and I have discussed, you know, that's the direction everything's going. Technology, the kids nowadays, I mean, they're basically born with a cell phone in their hand or an iPad or something. So what are we going to do to bring in youth and younger people, make it exciting to be a part of our golf course? So we're trying to bring in all the new technology, make it something hip, something cool. I want to be a part of that. You know, oh, look, you know, any new gadget, you know, kids and young adults are willing to try. They're enamored with it. So we figured out we're going to push that direction. We just got two skate caddies, which are similar to the golf boards. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just trying anything and everything to set ourselves apart from everything else going around us. And from what I understand, we're the only golf course in the state of Louisiana that has Quick Golf so far.
Yeah, that's what Harvey was telling me. And what about things like Top Golf? Is there a Top Golf in your area?
Actually, there have been rumors that Top Golf actually bought the old Times Picayune, which was the huge newspaper here. I mean, it's right by the Superdome. The acreage of land there was, you know, gigantic warehouse for the Times Picayune. I heard that Top Golf actually bought that piece of property that's been sitting vacant for years and are looking to put in one there. That's not exactly where I would have put it in New Orleans, because the view there, I mean, you got this river and all this stuff that you could have bought and put it over there, but they bought it, I guess, because they were thinking downtown near the French Quarter and the CBD that they'd be able to bring in more patronage that way and tourism. Hmm.
I would double check your sources on that, because what I've seen is that Topgolf needs a lot of square footage. And so they generally go outside of town where the real estate is much cheaper. I mean,
that's what we would have thought.
So yeah,
that's,
I mean, it's like 180,000 square
down.
Feet.
Yeah, right. I mean, no, this where the Times Picayune was, I mean, it's huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, huge, like multiple block kind of thing. And I thought that was kind of an odd, you know, That's just what I've been told. I haven't checked city records to know for sure.
Yeah, well, they did it in Las Vegas. They're centrally located, so
right.
Who knows? Their business model seems to be working. But we want to get people play golf, and that's why I am so fascinated with Quick Golf. We're going to take a short break, then we're going to bring Harvey back and talk about his challenges and his successes. So, Harvey, the way you stated it before, you are entrepreneurial in the way you look at life, which I absolutely love. What was it that Quick Golf called to you in your head saying, I think I got an idea that could work? How did Quick Golf start?
Well, I'd been doing some consulting for over 10 years with a group out of Chicago, and the two things that we saw consistently and constantly were golf courses had lots of space that wasn't being sold. I think right now, weather adjusted, the average utilization at a golf course is in the low 50% range.
Wow.
And on top of that, we were doing surveys across the country at all sorts of different public golf courses, municipal, daily fee, high end, low end, you name it. And we always asked a question, what are the primary barriers that prevent you from playing golf more often? And the number one answer was always time. And it was number one with a huge gap between number one and number two, which was money. Even during the Great Recession, 2008, 2009, 2010, when we were doing surveys, we saw the same thing over and over and over again. So, you know, over time, you just start thinking, okay, what might be a solution? Obviously, the one that became very prevalent with the introduction of places like Golf Now and TeeOff.com were people just discounting, mm-hmm. thinking, hey, I can make up, you know, what I'm losing by discounting, and that's going to get more people on my place to play, and they'll spend money for food and beverage and golf balls and whatever else. And that hasn't happened.
Yeah, how's that worked out for them?
Yeah, it hasn't worked out at all. And instead, we're seeing more courses close and rounds continue to drop. I think we saw a decrease this year of about 3%, according to Golf Data Tech. So it hasn't worked. Bottom line is it hasn't worked. Hmm. So I was talking to a client one day, and he was saying, you know, I've got these members that like to come out and think it's a country club. They just want to go out and play a few holes. I'd love it if there was a way I could just charge them to play a few holes. And that just hit me, having just used apps like OpenTable for restaurant reservations and Uber, you know, or Lyft for ride sharing, that maybe there was a solution using technology to make that happen and make it easy for a golf course to manage it. And that's how we came up with Quick.Golf. My partner in Minneapolis had a long career as a partner with Accenture and built the Navitaire airline reservation system,
wow.
which disrupted the airline business. It's what helped launch the 100 or so low-cost airlines around the world by having a reservation system that cost them far less than what the two other major systems were charging, which was basically keeping them out of the market. So Mike loves disrupting industries and has a history to that and had a technology background that I didn't. And when I called him and said, hey, what do you think of this idea? There was a long pause on the other end of the phone. And he said, I love it. We got to do this. So we found some investors. All of our investors, I think it's important to note, all of our investors are golf course operators. So they've been instrumental in helping us design this in a way that makes it easy for them to administer and that they thought would be most acceptable to some of their customers. And that was critical for us because neither Mike nor I had ever actually run a golf course before. So that's how this whole thing came about. We built it as a web app rather than an app that you're going to find in Apple in the Apple Store or the Android Store for a couple reasons. Number one was it makes it easier for us to make little adjustments as we go along. We knew that the first time out wasn't going to be perfect. And every time you make a slight adjustment in an app, you have to send it back to Apple for reapproval. And it's just a real pain.
Yep.
We didn't want to go through that. So we built it as a web app That's been just fine. You just open your phone, go to your browser, type in www.quick.golf, and bookmark it to your home screen, and then it looks and feels just like a regular app. People can't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. And we've had no issues with golfers figuring out how to do that. So we've been very happy with how that how that's moved along.
And so is it still just the web app? You've not created your own app yet?
No, not yet. We can at some point put a wrapper around it and put it into the stores. But we really haven't needed to. And actually, I live basically in or very near Silicon Valley. I read a lot of stuff about what's going on. I've got friends who are involved with different technologies. And web apps are kind of where the future is going with these type of smartphone technologies. So we may not have to. I mean, if we have to, we will. But at this point, there really isn't any reason for us to do so. We just opened up with a partner in New Zealand. And our first course was operating there. And they're doing it as a web app. And again, they've already had some activity since opening up with Quick Golf last week. And we're not hearing any issues with it. So, why change it?
And when did you introduce it to golf courses initially?
Initially was August of 2016. Mm-hmm. We've grown slowly to over 40 courses now. We'll have some more coming on pretty soon. But as you probably know, in the golf industry, acceptance of new technologies are slow. And we expected that. We didn't certainly... with our investors, never gave them any indication at all that this would be adopted on a mass scale very quickly. Yeah. We knew better. And they understood. They were happy with it. And we know that what we have isn't right for every golf course for any number of reasons. It could be the layout. It could be they like to close the golf shop at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. They don't want carts out, things like that. There's operational reasons why this won't work for every public golf course in the country. But we think that it'll work for most. And every golf course has a customer database that within that database, there's a small number of people, small percentage of people who either aren't playing anymore or aren't playing very much because they don't have time. Mm-hmm. And if Quick Golf can help reactivate those people to get them back on the course for 5 or 6 holes, or it might be the guy that would rather play a few holes than hit a huge bucket of what I call dead rocks on the range, or families, that want to come out. We've had good success with 2 courses in Phoenix that have first tee programs. Mm-hmm. And they sent a letter out to the family saying, hey, we got this new thing. Come out and play with your kids. Adults pay, kids play free. They'd come out in the evenings after work and play 4, 5, 6 holes. The kids don't necessarily have the attention span to want to play much longer than that with their parents. And generally the dad doesn't have the patience to want to play that much longer with the kids. So
yeah, good point.
So this worked out really well to bring some families out. And we think that's another component of where Quick Golf can get more family activities, because you're not having to commit to, 2 to 2.5 hours for a 9-hole round, or, 4 hours plus for an 18-hole round, plus the expense. So there's just lots of reasons. I'll tell you really quick. The first customer we had, first Quick Golf customer, was a course in Minneapolis. One of our partners is in Minneapolis, and they own and operate several courses in that market. And it was a woman with her mother. And so we contacted them, to get the story behind why they came out to play and play a few holes. And the daughter told us that her mother had played golf for years, and because of health problems with her feet, she really couldn't get out and play a full round of golf anymore. And they went out on a beautiful day and played 5 holes, and her mother couldn't have been happier. It was the first time in 3 years she had gone out on a golf course to play, and 5 holes was about all she could tolerate. And she walked off and couldn't be happier. So that's just another story of how Quick Golf can activate some golfers who normally wouldn't be playing at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Ever since I started doing this podcast and talking to people, I've kind of wondered aloud too many times, why are courses built as 2-9s as opposed to 3-6s?
Well, that's a good point. And a few years ago at the PGA show, that was the talk with all the architects, was we need to build courses with 3-6 hole loops. That's a great concept, except right now nobody's building golf courses. And the second problem is golf courses aren't Lego sets that you can just break apart and reassemble very easily.
How come? I'm kidding.
But the interesting thing is we just brought on the three County of Sacramento courses. And the reason that happened was Greg Bleek, who's the director of golf for Sacramento County, had contacted the architect Damian Pascuzzo about, hey, you know, what can we do to maybe do some reconstruction, move stuff around so we can have some short loops and maybe get more people out here to play. And Damian, who was doing some work at one of our clients, Hunter Ranch in Paso Robles, said, you know, hey, look, you know, first of all, whatever you do is going to be expensive, and I don't know that you maybe have the money for that, but why don't you try this instead? It's called Quick Golf, and it's a pay-by-hole thing. So Greg got in touch with me, and, you know, long and short of it is we got their three courses set up, and our setup is really quite simple. It only takes, you know, a day or two for it to be ready to go.
Wow.
But it was done, you know, instead of spending as much money as would needed to be spent to do some rerouting of holes. That's expensive for any golf course. We become an alternative to that.
Excellent. Excellent. So how does it work for the consumer? Walk me through how I would do this.
Sure. It's not that dissimilar from if you've used OpenTable for reservations or Uber and Lyft for rides. But again, through your browser on your smartphone, you go to www.quick.golf, bookmark it to your home screen, open it up, and register. Registration includes a credit card, just like Uber and Lyft do. Once you're registered, when you open the app, it will show you by geography the courses closest to you that have Quick.golf available. So it knows where your phone is. We know where your phone is, obviously, and it's showing you from nearest to furthest what courses are available. Once you choose a course, you click on the course, it's going to open up a page for the course that's got a little, you know, they can do some marketing in there along with what the rates are, the times that Quick Golf is available. And if it's available at the time you want to play, you click another button that sends a message to the course that says Fred Green's on his way in to play some Quick Golf. So the course knows you're coming, both on a dashboard that we provide them, a cloud-based dashboard, as well as an email message to a specific email they give us. Once you arrive, you check in at the course just like you do now. You show them that, hey, I'm Fred Green. I'm here to play a few holes on Quick Golf. You've got the app on the phone, and they send you out to play. Everybody's sending people off on the first tee. Again, generally we're seeing Quick Golf being used very late in the day, early evening, when the first tee is generally empty anyway. And then you go out and play. Play as many holes as you want. You're not preordaining how many holes you're going to play. We didn't want that. We didn't want to set it up that way because that becomes a limiting factor. People might say, hey, I'm here to play six holes, and they birdie the sixth hole and they get excited and they want to play more, but they've already committed. We didn't want that. So you play as many holes as you want. And when you're done, you can either check yourself out, telling the app how many holes you've played, or you can go back into the golf shop if you're dropping off a cart key or something, and they can check you out. Either way, we're using the honor system.
Yeah, that's the way I was like, people are going to try to take advantage of this and just walk off the course. What happens then if they don't check in?
We do have a couple deterrents. First of all, you really can't get out on a golf course unless you've checked in.
Sure.
You're going to get caught. But there's a automatic two-hole minimum charge. So our counter, when you go to report how many holes you played, starts at two. And we're actually doing a two-hole hold on the credit card just to make sure that we're going to get some money out of it if the guy just takes off after he's played how many holes he's played. But the second deterrent is if you don't check out or if the golf course doesn't check you out, you'll get an automatic email from us saying, hey, Fred, we know you played San Geronimo today. Hope you had a great time, but you haven't checked out. Please do so now or you'll be subject to a full 18-hole green fee charge at the discretion of the golf course.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've only had to use that once.
Wow.
And that was at the very beginning with the guy with his kids playing in Phoenix who got a hold of us right away and said, hey, no. I was distracted, had my kids, forgot to check out.
Yeah, likely story. Just,
yeah.
Okay.
The only thing we cannot track specifically is somebody who plays seven holes and reports they've played six. And the attitude with all of our clients and our partners is just kind of shrug their shoulders and say, hey, look, you know, somebody's going to try and screw me out of a hole. What am I going to do? At least I got some money out of it, right?
Yeah, which is more than you would have made before of them not playing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But again, from what we're seeing in, because we have timestamps on all of this, of when they checked in and when they checked out, it's been, we think, more than 90% of the time. And it could be 100% of the time, but certainly more than 90% of the time, people are reporting honestly. And
that's great.
It kind of supports our faith in golfers and golf as a game of honor and integrity. That you know we're not tracking them by GPS. We don't want to. We think there's way too many issues, potential customer service issues with trying that. We looked at it, and we know that we could do it. You know, building algorithms and getting all of the GPS coordinates for every green and tee box on every golf course in the country. It's not cheap, but it can be done. But the potential for more customer service issues with that is much higher than the very few customer service issues we've had.
Not to tell you how to run your business or anything, Harvey, but I just checked. You don't need www. All you have to dial is type in your browser, okay. quick.golf, because even comes up as https://quick.golf. There is no www, so you don't need that. All right. That's beyond that.
Okay.
All right. So does Shelly, are you still with us?
Sure am.
Great. What is the layout of your golf course that makes it conducive for using quick.golf?
Works out great for us, being an older, narrow, shorter course. You can go out one and two, and our two's green sits right next to eight's tee box. So when we send people off, like Harvey said, most people are coming in the afternoons. Most are coming with their kids. We say you can play four or you can play more, but if you want just to do four and get around quick, you can go one and two and then hit eight. Tee box and come back eight and nine. Now, if they want to go for more and they can hit the back nine, you can go out 10, 11, and 12 and then cut across to 17's tee box and then come back in. Our golf course is just set up perfectly like that.
So it's not going to screw everybody else up if somebody's skipping holes like that? I mean,
like we've said, it's usually been later in the afternoon, and right. We have a caveat that when they go out that they have to yield to play that's already out there. So if they, you know, finish on number two and there's somebody teeing off or they see somebody coming down seven, which seven greens ends up right next to two's green, they can obviously they have to allow them to play through first.
And how do you promote it to your customers?
Well, we're about to start a big online marketing campaign, of course, and social marketing. But when people have come in and we're also using it to offset, we no longer have twilight rates. And so we'll offer a 9-hole rate. And they're like, I'm not sure if I can get all 18 in. And we're like, well, go play nine, come in the shop, we'll log you in through Quick Golf. And then you can play, you know, however many afterwards. And we offer those Quick Golf rounds at an actual discount. So it kind of makes, you know, a makeshift twilight rate over our nine. But most of the people so far have come, it's actually been, like Harvey said, parents with their kids. you know, I want to get out and play a couple of holes after work. And, you know, my son here, he doesn't play a whole lot. And so we only can get through maybe five, you know,
and with him. What do you charge for the, what do you charge for that 9-hole rate?
For what, the quick golf rate or our regular nine?
Regular nine-hole rate.
Our regular nine-hole rate is $20. That's cart and green fee.
And what is your nine-hole quick golf rate?
Well, we do it, we priced it to where if you were going to play nine holes, then it's cheaper just to go ahead and pay the nine-hole rate. But if you're going to play under nine holes, I think we're doing green fee at $150 and cart rate, $1.50 a hole for green fee and $1 a hole for cart. So $2.50 per hole.
That's reasonable.
You think?
That should bring people out to the golf course.
And, exactly.
Yeah. And Harvey, is there any requirements as far as the layout for a golf course?
No, there isn't. Again, we know that there's just going to be some layouts that aren't going to work where you've got courses that where the eighth or ninth hole might be the furthest part of the property. Those are difficult for people that just want to play a few holes and find their way back quickly and easily. So that's not every course. There's probably several thousand public golf courses in the country that are laid out in a way that make it pretty easy for people to find their way back to the clubhouse after playing, you know, four, five, six holes. Our average right now is six holes. Mm-hmm. The fewest we've had is three. The most we've had is 13. Hmm. But the average we have across all of the sessions or rounds that have been played has been six holes. And that's exactly what we had put into our pro forma when we created a business plan. And we just kind of picked it out of the air. We thought, well, you know, it's going to be, you know, less than nine, more than one. Let's go with six.
And I can attest to that. They've said, oh, we're going to play four, and it ends up being six or seven.
Really?
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Are there some courses that are better suited than others as far as not just their layout, but their location?
Yeah, location is not critical, but important, because we just don't think people are going to drive a half an hour to play five or six holes of golf.
That makes sense.
And our average right now has been six holes. They'll drive 10 or 15 minutes at the neighborhood golf course, or if it's close by, or maybe they're driving by it on their way home from work. That works out fine. But it's not really well suited for a destination type course where you're packing up the car, picking up your buddies, and driving a half hour or 45 minutes to go play someplace that's maybe more rural than urban.
Right. So it's more of a practice thing. And it's probably a much better way to practice. Shelley, what do you think about this? A much better way to practice than just going to the driving range.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I've always told my students that you can hit as many golf balls on the range as you want, but unless you get out on a golf course and learn how to score and actually learn how to play the game, I mean, you're not going to get any better.
Well, it's a unique model to bring people out that complain about the same thing that they've been complaining about forever. It takes too long. It's too expensive. It's too hard. Well, Shelley can take care of the too hard part by giving lessons. And Harvey's going to definitely take care of the too expensive and takes too long part with quick golf. It's a phenomenal idea. I wish you all the luck in the world, Harvey. And Shelley, to you and your new owner, and I hope it works for you guys as well. Thank you so much for sharing this story.
Well,
thanks for having us, Fred.
Thanks, Fred. This is great. Appreciate it very much.
So what do you think? A couple years ago, and frankly, I don't remember which episode it was, but I made a comment about getting to play as much golf as you'd like when you belong to a country club. And the response was an epiphany for me when our guest said, well, when you belong to a country club, you get to play as little as you'd like. Whoa, that's what I love about quick golf. Instead of hitting a bucket off of a flat mat or worn out turf, I'd much rather take that hour to play three or four holes, especially if I can play two balls. Now, if you like this concept, share it with your favorite golf course and see what they say. I'd be interested to get your feedback on Quick Golf, whether you share your thoughts on the response from your course or just let me know if you would take advantage of it at your course. Now, if you're also fascinated with the statistics of golf participation, I've included a link in the show notes and on our blog to the 2017 NGF report on golf participation in the U.S. NGF is the National Golf Foundation, and on their website, they claim to be the most trusted and preeminent provider of golf market research, insights, and direct marketing services for organizations that rely on accurate and timely information to support their businesses. So it's an insider look. Anyway, all right, let's bring it down to a local level and get some help from our Golf Smarter Academy professor, Tony Manzoni, as he responds to a new listener question.
Hi, Fred. This is Ben Bailey from Lake Nona, Florida. Longtime Golf Smarter listener, so appreciate the show. And I had a question for Tony. I love the Law of Fundamental, and every year in January, I pull out the book and the DVD to try and remind myself what I should be doing and should be focusing on. But I found this time when I'm trying to stay connected on the left side, I have a real bad problem of it seems I'm pulling every shot to the left. It's not a hook. It's just a dead pull. So I would love to get Tony's thoughts on how to straighten that out. Thanks. We really appreciate the show. Bye.
Ben, I was listening to your question, and it's a very good one, and I'm pretty sure I can give you a solution. You say you're pulling your shots, and they're not hooking; they're just going straight, which means that your arms are ahead of your rotation on the downswing, which is very common. One of the causes could be that when you're rotating on your backswing, that you're putting too much weight on the right side. I really don't like that to happen, but it does happen. And then when you go to rotate the other way, you're going to be more right-sided, so you're going to hit off the right side, and that's going to make you throw the arms forward and pull the ball. Another example of pulling the ball is when you're in the proper position, you at the top, you get to the top, and you've actually got a little bit more weight on the left side than the right side. From there, you're supposed to unwind the body, letting the arms follow the body. That's the key. So look into sinking the arms to the body a little bit more. When you pull the ball, it's just that your arms are getting away around the body before the body clears to the left. You want to get the feeling that at impact, you're a slightly bit open because your chest is turning around your left leg. That's your axis, your left leg. So work on that, and you'll start feeling that pull of the arm with the turn of the body instead of throwing of the arm past the body. And that's a common mistake that we all have. In fact, in last week's tournament with Tiger Woods, the commentator was talking about the Tiger needs to sink his arms to his body. He gets his arms going ahead of the body, and of course, you can hit the ball all over the place. I hope this helps you.
So like Ben, maybe you're having an issue with one part of your game that doesn't seem to improve no matter what you read, listen to, or watch. That's why we've got this Golf Smarter Academy. It's your opportunity to get free advice from our teaching legend, Tony Manzoni. Please call our toll-free number at 415-761-1498. There's a button right on our website that'll dial it for you from your smartphone or tablet. And when your question gets answered on the show, you'll receive a copy of Tony's DVD, The Lost Fundamental, a Golf Smarter Academy diploma, and one of our brand new Golf Smarter ball markers. My apologies again for making the ball marker and DVD only available to U.S. addresses. It's just simply a cost thing. But as you've already heard on past Academy segments, geography has no limits to golf issues. Actually, no matter where you call in from, you'll get a Golf Smarter Academy diploma suitable for framing emailed to you. And if you'd like to be one of our Golf Smarter ambassadors with your group, get yourself a Golf Smarter ball marker for only $2 a piece, which includes shipping inside the U.S. But no matter where you live and are interested in getting the Golfers Podcast ball marker, send me an email, fred@golfsmarter.com, or click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com. This past weekend, I was back down in Palm Springs for my annual buddy trip. And while there, I met up with Golf Smarter listener Howard Hayden and three of his friends from Memphis, Tennessee, who were also in town for a charity tournament. But before their first round, they came over to College Golf Center in Palm Desert for their 90-minute Golf Smarter Academy clinic with Davey Evans and Gary Hopkins. Unfortunately, Tony couldn't join them. But I did post some photos of our instructors and the crew on the Golf Smarter Facebook page. You can also find some photos from my three rounds over the weekend on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So please check out at Golf Smarter on your favorite social media platform to follow our adventure. Now, before we go, I want you to know about another podcast now available from smarterpodcasts.com. Today, we release episode 1 of season 2 from Radio Baseball Cards. If you're a fan of baseball history, then I think you'll enjoy this program. Let me give you a little background. Radio Baseball Cards was a nationally syndicated radio program that I created and produced back in 1987. Each of these programs is only 2 minutes long, but we feature amazing and amusing stories as told by the greatest Major League Baseball players from the 20th century. So clearly, I was into podcasting decades before we ever even heard the word. But I worked as a production director for KSFO Radio in San Francisco when we were broadcasting Oakland A's games, and I had access to players and announcers when this all came together. These were broadcast as a pregame show over 40 radio stations across the United States for the 1987 MLB season. Frankly, I still believe that this is some of the best work I've ever done, and I wanted to share these stories after they've been sitting in a cabinet for 30 years. As I said, this is season 2 for the podcast because of the 162 episodes that were originally broadcast before each game in 1987, I'm only going to publish an episode a week, starting with spring training, running to the end of the World Series this year. So please subscribe for free to Radio Baseball Cards wherever you get your favorite podcast and get each new episode delivered automatically in your sleep. And since they're so short and I want you to hear them all, I wanted to give you a taste of what I'm talking about. So here's an episode we used in season 1 with a very special World Series story from Hall of Famer Billy Herman talking about his first World Series appearance in 1932 as introduced by Hall of Fame pitcher and host Don Drysdale.
Here's another Radio Baseball Card. Hall of Famer Billy Herman played in 4 World Series and loved every minute. Well, almost every minute. He'll take us back to the 1932 World Series right after this. Billy Herman played all 154 games at second for the Cubs in 1932, which led him to his first taste of the World Series.
My first World Series, I was just a young kid in Chicago, and we played probably the greatest team of all time, the 1932 Yankees. And I didn't enjoy that series too much. We were overmatched. They had a guy named Lou Gehrig. In the outfield, they had Babe Ruth. In fact, they had 7 future Hall of Famers on that one team, 7 of them. We had myself, and we had one outstanding player. Was Gabby Hartnett. Kai Kyle were there in the Hall of Fame, both of them. And we had some pretty good pitching, but we just couldn't stop them. They were too good for us. They were so much better than we were that we didn't have a chance. They just slaughtered us, really.
The Yankees outscored the Cubs 37-19 in that 4-game sweep. Game 3 featured Babe Ruth pointing to the center field bleachers just before a Charlie Root 0-2 pitch and then hitting his final World Series home run. With Radio Baseball Cards, I'm Don Drysdale.